Salutations, folks. We've got some legitimacy being lent to Indy Cornrows courtside. Former Pacer Antonio Davis joins us. Antonio, first former NBA player to join us on the podcast, so I hope you're as honored as I am to have you.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. It is an honor to be here to sharing some hoops.
Definitely. Now, Antonio, you're a analyst now for ESPN. Give us a little background into how that gig came to be. I know that there was one day I'm just sitting on my couch watching SportsCenter, and Antonio Davis is on television. What gives with that?
Well, when NBA TV, I live in Atlanta, first of all, and when NBA TV moved all of their stuff to Atlanta, they called me down to do some stuff for them. And it wasn't something that I originally thought I would be doing, you know, any kind of broadcasting, anything. But I went down there, gave it a shot, and it was a lot of fun. Just sitting there talking hoops to some of the guys and sharing with fans some insight on how the game is played and why different things happen. So after doing that for about a year and a half or so, just got out there and started throwing some videos out there, and ESPN kind of liked some of the stuff they saw, had me in for a day's interview, and next thing you know, I'm doing some stuff for ESPN.
Not a bad place to be. Antonio, by the way, does things on SportsCenter, NBA Tonight, NBA Coast to Coast, and across other ESPN NBA programming. We're recording this on a Wednesday, so Pacers-Knicks is on the way this evening. You were a part of a few of those games back in the day. Any fond memories with the Pacers-Knicks, Hicks-Knicks square downs?
It's funny you say that. You know, I remember, it's one of the things that I remember most is, you know, playing the Knicks for the first time, and everybody's telling you, you know, how tough it is to play against Charles Oakley and Anthony Mason and Charles Smith, and I can go on and on and on. But it was. I'm glad that I did it because it taught me how to play the game on such a high physical level. You know, and protecting Reggie most of the time, rebound the basketball, protecting the paint. I mean, all those things were learned playing against tough teams like that. So it's always, I've always had fond memories of those challenges and playing against great guys like Charles Oakley, and it's one that I'll always remember.
Now, you mentioned Charles Oakley twice there. I want to get to him in a second because you actually played with him in Toronto after being dealt there. You spent the first 6 years of your career in Indiana. Some background before, you know, some Pacer fans might not remember that they drafted you 2 or 3 years before you played a game in Indiana. What did you do before?
Well, I was drafted in the second round, number 45, and you know, I honestly felt like I just wasn't ready to enter the NBA and be effective. And, you know, I was talking to my agent, Bill Duffy, and we basically talked about never getting a second chance to make a first impression. And I didn't want to come in as a project. I wanted to come in as a contributor. So I went overseas for 2 years, came back, played in the summer league. The Pacers and I, we just couldn't agree on a deal, and I had another offer to go over to play in Italy, and I ended up playing for Mike D'Antoni in Milan, Italy. And then after that, Larry Brown got the head coaching job. I went back, played in the summer league, and he loved the way that I played and gave me an opportunity that I'll always be forever grateful. So that's just kind of how it happened. Next thing you know, I'm playing for the Pacers.
And you were one half of the esteemed Davis brothers combo for a while there. You and Dale Davis earned a reputation. And I say earned a reputation as two of the tougher guys in the league, especially on the same team. Jalen Rose is another guy working at ESPN and a high profile and on a bunch of shows. And he's told some stories about the fact that you guys were always in there having people's back. Well, how weird was it to see, I'll ask this a little bit later, but Dale came back, played with the Pacers in 2004-05. But just seeing you guys there at the same time, what was that dynamic like playing originally with Dale Davis?
Well, you know, it was, you know, I always said most of the time it was tougher in practice than it was in games. I was so happy to play a game where I didn't have to bang up against Dale Davis every day and play a 7-4 Rick Smith. At the sign, we had LaSalle Thompson. We had, who else? We had just a bunch of guys that you didn't want to play against in practice for 3.5 hours, you know? So I think that's kind of where we both, you know, got our toughness from. It's just banging up against each other every single day. I mean, it got to the point where we were playing one-on-one after practice. We were shooting together. We knew we had our limitations, but we pushed each other every day to get better, and it actually helped the team and helped us to prepare our careers.
The 97-98 season, when you were in Indiana, that was the year that if there was any team that was going to give the Bulls that sort of run and knock MJ off his throne, it was going to be that group, and you guys came closer than any other team during that entire run to doing that. What was the dynamic of that series, talking about the Eastern Conference Finals, but really of the season, just that year? That seems to be the best Pacers team, maybe since this one, maybe until this one's come about in 2013.
Yeah, well, you know, thanks a lot. We pride ourselves really with just coming out each and every day and being professional. From the time we walked into the arena to the time we left, you would see guys there early, either getting treatment or lifting weights or getting up shots or working on their game. And I think the thing that was really special was, you know, we were like a big family. Every time you look up, it would be 5, 6, 7 of us out to dinner. When we were in town, there was a kid's birthday party, everybody would be there, you know, single guys, married guys, bringing presents, you know, it was really something special. And I you take it for granted. Until you leave there, you don't realize how close we were and how important it was to be close. But that team was special. We had all the tools necessary. We just didn't have Michael Jordan. You know, when you playing against a guy like that, you know, it just takes basketball to a whole nother psychological level. It wasn't even a physical thing. He just was a fierce competitor that was, you know, obviously talented, you know, physically and otherwise. So that's what it came down to. You know, sometimes you don't have that guy, and that guy is a special guy who went on to win 6 NBA rings and is arguably the best player that's ever played the game. So that's the experience we took from that whole situation.
And there's the shot everyone remembers with Reggie hitting it in MJ's face and Larry Bird on the sideline just standing stone-faced. Do you have any memories of playing for Larry Bird?
Yeah, he was tough, man. You know, I took a lot from playing for him. I can only imagine how he was as a player. Just a fierce competitor once again and very professional about everything that he did. It's no wonder he's now become a great executive, you know, on the management side of building this Pacer team now, because, you know, obviously he played with great players himself, and Kevin McHale and Robert Parrish, Danny Ainge, and you can go on and on. So it was just great to take away some of that competitiveness and how to go about working every day to get better.
Now, Antonio, I know you're on a tight schedule, so I want to get you in and out real quick here, but I wanted to ask about this year's Pacer team. You talked about the level of professionalism you guys had, about the focus that comes in. That's all this group has talked about. They're playing New York tonight, and they recently got on SportsCenter, all 5 starters. Now, George Hill, this is a whole thing off to the side that I'll probably mention later in the show when you're gone. George Hill wasn't asked a question. So it's the 4 guys up there, George Hill just kind of hanging out. But it seems like everyone else in this group, you know, David West, Roy Hibbert, 2 tough guys there. I mentioned earlier you played in Toronto with Charles Oakley, 2 guys on a dark alley team right there. David West seems like he might be a guy on one of those dark alley teams in the modern day NBA.
Well, I mean, you said it best when, you know, you take a guy like David West, who, you know, I played against also. He's he's one of those tough guys that just go about his business, never complains, you know, would do whatever needs to be done, rebound, you know, post-ups, late-game situations, will guard the toughest player on the other team. That's the kind of guy you want to play next to. You want that guy on your team. And, you know, I had that in Dale Davis and some of the other, Derek McKee and some of the guys that I had. But when you look at guys like that, man, it's you take it for granted because every team doesn't have a guy like that, that's for sure.
So how do you compare this Pacer team to some of the groups that you played on back in the day?
You know, I like the fact, you know, I went on ESPN earlier in the year in preseason and said I thought that they would win the whole thing this year. You know, I think that Paul George is definitely growing into his own. You know, he had a taste of it last year. You get all the way to, you know, conference finals, game seven. You never know what that feels like until you get there. So until you get that experience, you just never know. And now that he has a taste in it, you see the way that he plays and carry himself late in games. He wants to take that big shot. He's just hungry to get to that next level. Roy Hibbert, you know, kind of the same way. He's protecting the basket. I think they have the ingredients, all the ingredients this year to compete against any team in the league and be successful. So it's just a matter of them staying healthy, staying together through thick and thin, and then really being in the season on a high note going into postseason play and just clicking on all cylinders. So I just think they have what it takes, and we'll just have to wait and see how everything pans out.
It'll definitely be fun to keep an eye on, Antonio. I know that I've already kept you marginally over the time I was trying to go for.
Okay.
I'm going to try.
Okay.
Yeah? Because I'll try. I'll speak for Pacer fans and say that at some point I would love to have you back on for an extended period of time because there are so many things. Talking Tracy McGrady from his rookie year and Charles Oakley playing with him.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to settle for a taste this time.
No, hey, no problem. You give me a holler. And I'll get on and we can really dig into some of the Pacer days because I really enjoy playing for them. I've always been very appreciative of the organization, of Larry Brown, of the Pacer fans. It was such a blessing to have that as my first team and first city to ever play for. And I'll always be appreciative.
I like how that sounds. Pacer fans, take that as it is. Antonio Davis might be making it a comeback appearance. For now, we'll let you go, Antonio. Thanks for the time.
All right, you take care, man. Have a good one.
Okay, you too. Well, that was fun. I did not mind that. We're going to take a quick turnaround because we still have time to kill. It's a feature-length podcast, and I don't have another media guest booked, but I'm going to grab a buddy of mine. We watched the Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Semis last year, Pacers-Knicks. This is the first time they square off since then. We're going to give him a ring. Z, coming up next. This is going to be fun because he doesn't know we're calling. No idea.
Hello?
Hey, Z.
Hey, Jim. How's it going?
You're good. You're on the podcast right now.
I am?
Yeah. Yeah, you're following Antonio Davis, by the way.
Oh, I feel so honored.
that's what he said before. Well, that's more what I said when we had him on. What we're doing basically is since Antonio Davis only had like 10 minutes to talk, I dragged 12 out of him, but I wanted to make the podcast longer, so I figured we'd talk Pacers and Knicks.
All right, sounds good.
Let's start by the fact that we were both watching Pacers-Knicks last time they played. Remember the last time, actually, the Pacers and the Knicks played, we were watching that game together. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Remember Born Ready?
Yeah. Yes. Yes, I do.
I'll give you some background, folks. I'm sorry if I've not kept you in the light in this. Z is he's a mild Pacer fan, but he gets, like, way into it. He protects himself by not being a really invested fan because he gets really intense when he watches. Can you explain a little more about that, Z?
Yes, well, it's the best way I can describe it is, and I've gone over this before, is I'm a pretty big movie buff, and one of my favorite movies of all time is Highlander. And whenever I get really into a sports team, I start to project the Highlander persona of kind of this underdog one shot going up against a big menace onto the team that I'm in. And so that causes a great emotional involvement, and is also, in my own way, shaped the way I rank teams. Would you like me to go a little bit more into the Highlander principle? Or?
Yes, continue on the Highlander principle. Continue.
All right, well, to make kind of a long story short, as far as what in the film, the idea is there are all these different people fighting, and once you defeat somebody, you gain their spirit and their strength. So, you know, kind of old-school warrior stuff. So the way I rank teams is not so much by how many games they won overall or kind of the normal stats, but if you are a team and you beat what's currently the highest-ranked team, then you, by de facto, become the highest-ranked team. You gained their, that's how I do it.
You're now the Highlander. And I want to stop now because I think I posted this on your wall, Zay, that Grantland, I'm pretty sure, listened in on our conversations from the past 2 years, and they stole this concept for themselves.
Yes, I do recall reading that. I'm glad to see my theories are catching on. great minds and all that.
But the last time the Pacers and the Knicks were playing, it wasn't a Highlander game, but they got the chance to go up against the Heat a little later. Well, we can delve into that, whatever. I'm off topic. I'm rambling. We were watching this Knicks game, and you're just going bonkers, like learning about the greatness that is Born Ready, because Pacer fans had been like on and off the bandwagon, and you're watching this guy just do Born Ready things, and you're like, what is he doing? What's going on?
Yeah, it was amazing to see it. It was just like, holy shit,
no. I think we can bleep. I don't know. I've never had someone curse on air before. I guess we can bleep it out. We can leave it in. We'll find out. Yeah. I'll talk to the editors.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert: the editors will probably have me bleep it out.
I read it.
Either way,
the last.
But continue.
The last
you're.
The way that Born Ready added edge to that game, man. But yeah, that just watching stuff get done in the game like that. I mean, you were there, just.
Yeah, wow. It was something to watch. That's the thing that I love about this Pacer team, to bring it back to the Pacers and Knicks. I had talked with you before the season how I didn't think that the Knicks were as good as Indiana. I thought Indiana was a clear second-cut team behind the Heat in the Eastern Conference, and that they were going to take a step forward. And the first half of the season cut them back because they just didn't play very well, and the Knicks started hot. But it totally flipped because the Knicks stopped playing as well as they had at the start of the year, and they were not a good matchup with the Pacers, even as well as Melo ended up playing. Paul George?
They ran out of steam on that, you know?
Yeah, Paul George? He's so good now. How many Pacer games have you watched this year, Z?
Oh, neighborhood of about.
There have only been 10 Pacer games played so far this year.
Oh, you know what I'm doing?
What's that?
Okay, so I've watched every Pacer game, and then when I've been over people's house, I've been watching a couple of Bulls games because I got a bunch of Chicago fans. So.
Oh, so you're like, so you're really in on the NBA this year?
Yeah. Absolutely. So yeah, I threw those in because I was going to tell you the other day, which really isn't the other day. It was more like a week or two ago, watching the Pacers Bulls game on TV. Fourth dimensionally, it's like we beat the 90s era Bulls.
How so?
Oh, you never heard that Back to the Future reference?
No.
Okay. Mostly just.
You can educate me.
Just if you beat somebody in the same place as somebody else was, then it's kind of like you beat that person too.
So
exports the movies a lot.
So we have the Michael Jordan Bulls beat now.
Mm-hmm.
But we also lost the game in Chicago.
Fair enough.
So I don't know how that works. The point I was getting to earlier was that Paul George has. Have you noticed that he has a legitimate ISO game now?
Yeah.
He's taking guys off the dribble and dunking and hitting threes, and he's pretty much the best pacer since Reggie Miller, if not a better all around player than Reggie ever was.
I was gonna say George is a bit more well rounded than I mean, Reggie had great like distance game. I know. I would never associate Miller with like close up game, you know. Like I'd never felt like I wouldn't trust Miller in the lane because obviously he'd get stuff done in the lane, but you know, it just wasn't his strong suit. But yeah, George is pretty even keeled on there. I makes him nice and versatile.
I just don't understand how he got so much better so quickly. That was one of the things I was talking to you about. That Paul George, everyone was calling him a superstar just because they hadn't really seen him before. And it's like he's taken everything that people thought he was and actually gotten that good. It's really weird.
Yeah. Well, I remember a couple of years ago, so Paul George, I had kind of gotten really into with my old Highlander principle 2 years ago. I was telling you, I was saying Paul George was the Highlander. You know, 2 years ago, it was kind of a little premature. Back then, you know, George didn't really have the stats to kind of back that up, but it turns out it might have only just been premature because right now, like, he's good. And I don't think there's a more simple way to put it, but he's gotten good.
Yeah, I actually want to dive a little more into the Highlander principle again, because Grayland, I've been a little more silent on this because I've been looking for where they've been keeping track, and they just haven't been keeping track. So, like, it was like they said they were going to do it, and then they just didn't do it. So, right now, we don't know who the Highlander is, but it applies to more than just individual teams. It applies to players, too. You thought Danny Granger might have been the Highlander. Hold on 1 second. I'm going to silence the phone. That was R. Kelly's ignition. That's my ringtone, in case you're wondering. The couple years ago, when you thought Danny Granger was the Highlander, it's looking more and more like he might have been Sean Connery. And like Tim Duncan might have also been Sean Connery.
The guy who kind of trained the main Highlander guy. I could buy into that comparison. I think that's a good analogy for the situation.
And LeBron's definitely the Kurgan.
No doubt about that.
I'm trying to figure out, though, because Kevin Durant's also there. A couple years ago, you thought Durant might have been the Highlander. It looks like he was just another one of those challengers. I've never seen Highlander, Z. You still haven't shown me this movie. How many guys does the Kurgan kill in cinematic action before Connor McLeod actually has to take him down?
Are we going to count all the members of the McLeod clan that he kills? Because it's up into the teens if that's the case.
Okay, let's count them on one hand and then everyone else on the other. So how many McLeods are there?
You can't count all. For the sake of
brevity,
simplicity, we're going to do. There's three kind of epic battles for the Kurgan in that film. So one is against the various members of the McLeod. Actually, no, four, sorry. Okay, so there's the one against the different members of the McLeod clan. There's the one where the Kurgan defeats Sean Connery. There's the one where the Kurgan fights this random Kenyan dude who's a total badass. And then there's the one where there's actually two different fights between Kurgan and Connor McLeod, so.
Okay. So I lost count. Is it like before he fights Connor McLeod, he kills the McLeod clan and then like four other guys? The badass Kenyan.
Badass Kenyan, Sean Connor, and then the various McLeod clan people. So
okay, so let's say that the various McLeod clan people are the Pacers, right?
Yep.
And right. He's already killed. Let's say Durant's the badass Kenyan. And also the Spurs with Greg Popovich are Sean Connery, because you know there's Tim Duncan with Roy Hibbert and everything, and it's cool there. I think that actually matches up really well because Tim Duncan's been sort of Roy Hibbert's Sean Connery, and Greg Popovich looks like Sean Connery, and also Connor McLeod fought the Highlander. LeBron and Paul George faced off last year, and it was obvious that Paul wasn't ready. Yeah. Z, are we looking at this year being the ascendance of the Highlander?
This might be. I wouldn't put it past it. I could see that actually.
So he's looking like the Highlander.
It is looking like Highlander.
Like exactly like Highlander. Everyone's been thrown off because they think Durant might be the Highlander. He's not the Highlander, Z. Paul George is.
I'll get behind that.
So what happens, by the way, we got to spoil it too. What happens when Paul George defeats LeBron James this year and brings an NBA title to Indianapolis? What was the second Highlander movie about?
Oh, God.
Or does it fit at all?
The second Highlander movie, and I'll have to put in, the second Highlander movie was so the first Highlander was very mythical, very warrior, very kind of your fantasy, you know, sword, sorcery stuff. The second Highlander movie has space aliens in it, Jim. So I don't know if the second Highlander movie is... It begins with Connor McLeod having, like, rotted away his time and embitterment since he won the prize, so...
That doesn't sound promising.
No, it doesn't.
Let's not talk about that.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Let's instead talk about the Knicks-Pacers game, which was ostensibly the reason I called you originally. What surprises me about the Knicks, are you familiar? Did you know that the Knicks signed J.R. Smith's brother just to get J.R. Smith to agree to a contract?
I was aware of that. I never heard about how much money was involved in doing that. Question the financial viability of that.
It's not a really big contract. That's not the problem. The problem is that a rival talent evaluator called Chris Smith one time, and this is before this all happened, once called Chris Smith the worst player in NBA Summer League history.
Wow.
Like, the worst player in Summer League history.
That's really rough.
And he now has a spot on the Knicks.
Oh. Well, moral of this story is you can't succeed piggyback on your brother's accomplishments.
Yeah, pretty much. And that's actually really indicative of the Knicks, though, is the problem, because... J.R. Smith is probably, at this point, their second-best player. The Knicks are really scuffling this year because Melo can score, J.R. Smith can score, but they're both really streaky and ball-hoggish, and no one else has been good. They have Andrea Bargnani from the black hole of despair, Toronto Raptors. There's literally nothing good about this team, and New York fans can back me up on it. It's really depressing.
Yeah, it's sounds pretty depressing, to me. Well, I'm not a big fan of the idea of. I feel like it kind of cancels out if you sign a crappy player in order to get a good one. Not that they're gonna play him all that much, but you know, it's the I don't know.
So final prediction, Z. What?
I'm an all or nothing kind of guy. I don't believe in like signing a crappy player just to get a good one. But then again, this is also. I'm not a sports manager. I'm not a sports team manager, so I don't get to make those kind of decisions.
So, do you have a final prediction?
What would you do if you were in their position, Jim? If you were picking players for the Knicks, would you go through with it, or would you kind of stand your ground and say no? You aren't going to tarnish the Knicks' reputation that way.
I would have just not signed Chris Smith.
That sounds like a good plan.
I would have not signed Chris Smith.
That works. So are we going to compare Chris Smith to a former band member we once had that only knew how to play Eruption? is that a fair comparison?
I don't think that's even a fair comparison because Chris Smith doesn't know how to play Eruption either. Like, we had Z and I in high school were in a band, and Z is a tremendous guitarist. And we had another guitarist who was not so tremendous, but he knew how to play Eruption. The Van Halen song, and just the tapping part, not even the whole song, just the tapping part, and couldn't play rhythm guitar. Chris Smith, Z, is more like Remember when I tried to play drums in the high school pep rally?
I do remember that.
That's Chris Smith.
Tries, but just can't get it together.
Pretty much.
Does the NBA have any pride anymore?
Not the New York Knicks.
They don't have pride, but they have money, right? Each their own, I suppose.
Yeah. All right, Z, before I let you go, any final thoughts on Pacers-Knicks tonight? Are you going to be watching? Where are you going to be watching?
Oh, yeah, I'll be watching. I will be, I'm actually going to go to B-Dubs tonight, so get myself some hot wings, sit down, and enjoy the game. Go Pacers. Money and money doesn't count for anything. Go Paul George. That's all I got.
All right. Shameless plug for Buffalo Wild Wings. We're not getting anything from them, and maybe that can change in the near future. All right, Z, awesome. Yeah. Thanks for the impromptu sponsorship. Thanks for everything, and we'll get this thing up.
All right, cool.
Talk to you, man.